From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Sacramento has the largest refugee resettlement center in the United States. Did you know that? More than 5,200 refugees came into the county last year. But the Trump administration announced this week that the new fiscal year beginning October 1st would see a change in that number. The number now admitted into the United States nationally will be limited to 30,000, and that's the lowest number in more than 38 years. It is, of course, expected to impact what happens in this Northern California region. Here's a bit of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's message. This is from his announcement on Monday.
The United States anticipates processing up to 310,000 refugees and asylum seekers in fiscal year 2019. We propose resettling up to 30,000 refugees under the new refugee ceiling, as well as processing more than 280,000 asylum seekers. They will join the over 800,000 asylum seekers who are already inside the United States and who are awaiting adjudication of their claims.
I'm going to give you a few more numbers, and I realize it's a lot of numbers, but we'll give some human context to this in a moment. Last year, the cap on admissions was 45,000, and that had been the lowest number going back to 1980. But the U.S. reportedly didn't even meet that number. Only about 21,000 refugees were admitted. In the studio with me now are representatives of two different agencies that work with refugees in our area. Deborah Ortiz is CEO of the group Opening Doors. Hi, Deborah. It's always a pleasure to have you here
in the
studio.
Thank you for having me, Beth.
And from Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services, the Director of Family Services is Genevieve Levy. And Genevieve, glad to welcome you back to
Thank you.
To
Good
Insight.
To see you, Beth.
So give me some reaction to this announcement. It wasn't a surprise. Was the specific number a surprise, Deborah?
We anticipated a low number. We never know what how low the number is, but 30,000 we were not surprised. It certainly is, as you noted, the lowest number in history, and it certainly doesn't reflect the 62 million or so displaced across the world and the 22.5 that have already been million that have already been classified as refugees. So when you compare that with what the U.S. is agreeing to accept, but we know will not actually arrive based on this last year, it's really profoundly disheartening.
Does that mean there will be a big drop in resettlements in this region, or because the center is so big, will there still be quite a sizable number?
Well, you mentioned the less than 45,000 that had been approved this last fiscal year, that barely 21,000 had been resettled. Our region has been hit significantly. We saw some large arrivals in the first quarter, but our organization is about at 54% of what we were told we were going to receive. And these are refugees who had been vetted, who had been cleared, who had been authorized. But that last final piece of allowing them to be provided a visa has not been afforded. So we have at least 50% less than what we were told that we're going to arrive. And we are hearing from people afar saying we're not being able to travel, that final step.
Genevieve, say a bit about what Opening Doors does, where in the process your organization is.
So refugee resettlement is the first 90 days, which there are five organizations in our region. So that's sort of that really critical front end, kind of pick them up at the airport, get them settled, get them enrolled, their children enrolled in school, help them find access to resources. And then we have many post-90 days, as all of our organizations do. And we also have programs that help immigrants, undocumented immigrants. So immigration legal services, case management for survivors of human trafficking. We have literacy programs and ESL classes. We're a micro lender. We do microloans for small businesses, over 2.7 million. So we have an array of services. This program was the origin of our organization, and we have since branched out to post 90 days. But this is the most critical, I think, that is the core of most of our services.
And now, Genevieve, at what point might an individual or a family come to Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services and say, okay, now what? Now where do I go?
So in all of those steps along the way, too. So we're the newest of the five agencies here in Sacramento. We've only been doing resettlement since the beginning of 2015. It's a tremendous fit to our organization in terms of being able to help individuals with their immediate needs.
Right.
Like Deborah mentioned, with with resettlement, finding housing, getting them connected to services, and then helping towards self-sufficiency and financial independence with becoming that, hopefully self-sufficient, getting connected to job resources and things like that. We've seen a tremendous increase in the refugee and newcomer populations utilizing all of our programs and services beyond just resettlement. I mentioned we're very small comparison with, I know, Opening Doors, over 1,000 last year, and some of the larger partners in the region, IRC and World Relief, almost at 2,000. We resettled 200. So we're very much smaller, but a partner in this work. We're seeing lots of families coming to our English classes, parenting classes, utilizing our food resources. It's been really great to see some of our food partner agencies wanting information on what culturally appropriate food should I be serving our new customers and clients. So it's just been a change in the region, and we're happy to embrace the clients in all of our programs.
Genevieve, to be specific about it, your program seeing an increase in attendance doesn't necessarily reflect what's happening in terms of resettlement in the area. It may just mean that people are plugging into the services.
For sure. For sure. Something that's really unique about Sacramento, and not to confuse everyone with like more numbers and different terms and everything.
Well, this is a complex picture that we're trying to outline.
So outside of refugees are also another category of individuals called special immigrant visa holders, SIVs. Mm. Right now, primarily are coming from Afghanistan. Prior have been from Iraq. And these folks have worked with U.S. military overseas, often in combat as translators, working directly with chief of commission at the embassies. As I mentioned, right alongside troops, we have civil engineers, electrical engineers, drivers, security guards. So have done the work with U.S. They go through another application process, security clearance process, more extreme than the refugee vetting. They get this other type of visa, special immigrant visa, and then they're funneled into the refugee resettlement process. So they are assigned to our agencies just like refugees, although they are not refugees. So I try to use sometimes newcomer to kind of encompass everyone that we see here in Sacramento. But that has actually been what's been keeping a lot of our agencies, afloat, it was probably the right word, or making us the biggest receiving community in the U.S., is that Sacramento is a magnet community right now and has been the last 3 years for Afghan special immigrant visa holders. They want to come here to Sacramento.
What happened that Sacramento became this big dot on the map, Deborah?
Well, I like to tell the story about when my grandparents came to Sacramento from the state of Jalisco in the 30s. A family settles. The family back home says, where's a welcoming place? And they have that conversation, not unlike that experience. So that's why Sacramento early families were mostly from the state of Jalisco, this region where my grandparents are from. So that is the same story that happens with the Afghan community awaiting arrival. On top of that, they also realized...
Wait a minute. Are you saying at some point Afghan refugees started to come here and then said, this area works, there are services, and more came?
There are jobs.
Mm-hmm. And a relatively affordable cost of living, which is... Some of them may have earlier settled in L.A. or San Diego. We see that we have surpassed L.A. for that reason. We're just slightly below San Diego. But that experience over the last 3 to 4 years, starting with Iraqi special immigrant visa holders that preceded the large Afghan, there's that conversation across those communities that it's a welcoming community, it's an affordable community. So
as
it's
opposed
word of mouth.
To a government agency designating Sacramento or deciding to build a center
they
here?
They self-designate.
Yeah, so they, the U.S. primarily, I want to say it's like 95% are U.S. Thai-based resettlement. So you have to pick a friend, a family member, a coworker, a neighbor, a relative that you know. And we as resettlement agencies have to make contact with that person and say, can they come? Yes or no. It doesn't mean that that friend, the U.S. has to help, but just is willing to sort of be part of that welcoming. And so it has really created the snowball in the last 4 years, like every wave of immigration ever. So you go where your friends and your neighbor and your cousin are. It's really common right now for us to resettle somebody. We have two Afghan SIV staff, for example. We hired the staff because we had to serve more of the community. We needed the language capacity. They were both translators, lawyers in Afghanistan, speak 5 languages. Easy, quick hire. They have been the U.S. tie then for 3 or 4 other families just since they arrived 3 years ago.
To what degree are you assisting people who are in the pipeline, or does your work only begin once they've been approved and they arrive by plane?
I can speak for our agency. We are it's a little complex. There are 9 NGOs, non-government organizations, mm-hmm. that work with the U.S. State Department. They are told you'll have 30,000, and then they essentially divide up what the numbers that they will administer, and then they let us, the local affiliates, know you're going to get 1,000 people this year, and that process is that, you know, the refugees self-select once they're vetted and cleared, and word of mouth or by whatever means, we basically are told you're going to receive X number of people in the next week, this family size, and we then kick into gear and start to look for apartments and all these things. And
yeah, it's primarily once they arrive, but you have to kind of prepare at least a couple weeks in advance. We, on occasion, will get communication from someone overseas that has already decided to come and says, I want you. And they're starting to send emails and communicate in English. And we see them a couple weeks later. So mm-hmm. we have been in communication with clients ahead of arrival, but there isn't any role as such with our organizations in choosing or advocacy in any way. We are receiving them when they get here.
That is Genevieve Levy. She's Director of Family Services for the Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. We'll post a link on our website if you're hearing something that you need more information about. Also in the studio with me, Deborah Ortiz, the CEO of the group Opening Doors. So getting back to the announcement Monday, what impact is that going to have here?
Well, I will say that our organization, we received 53% or 55% of what we were told we were going to receive and we budgeted for. And that's the realization is I sort of acknowledge that we need to presume that the arrivals will be nominal at best.
You have much more capacity mm-hmm. than people here to take advantage of that capacity.
Well, it just means that we're not going to be doing resettlement and we're going to be doing other programs. Mm. We may get one or two. They may trickle in. But I don't think we have any expectations that we're going to see the numbers return to anything like this last year. By the end of this month, which will be the end of the fiscal year, we probably will have settled 545 out of what we were told would be 968.
Wow.
And so that we have to assume that that 545 or whatever is probably going to be much higher than what we'll get in the next fiscal year.
I am just seeing recent numbers, 2017 numbers. Mm-hmm. Can you take me back? And I'm looking for whether there was a dramatic shift from the end of the Obama presidency into the beginning of the Trump administration. Did the numbers change for you regionally?
So I joined.
It was timed with the also increase of the SIVs. So the timing of sort of leaving Iraq and then the issuing of a lot of the Afghan SIV visas and the desire to come to Sacramento. I think all of those things kind of were happening on a trajectory the last 3 years.
But so yes. I think 2014 was when we started to see a pickup in Afghan mm-hmm. special immigrant visa holders really increased. Late 15, but definitely 2016, 2017. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, we had some Iraqi persons who helped our government, our military. They were also SIVs. The alignment with the Obama administration, what was his peak authorization?
75 to 80, and that was what was sort of being predicted for the future administration. And then when things had changed, yeah, it's sort of been a surprise every year what it's going to look like.
And I think it's important to point out that even though the approved number to arrive last year was 45,000, we have seen these bureaucratic delays and no official statutory cutting of these numbers. The travel ban overlay did not directly affect Afghan SIVs, which are the bulk of our clients. However, we saw these delays. They simply were bureaucratically delaying them. So we assume that even if they're and in this most recent announcement, the presidential determination, which is done before October 1, the president is supposed to confer with Congress. That did not occur. So between a combination of administrative delays by design, I think some ignoring or thwarting regulatory processes, the net result is really we cannot anticipate, at least our organization, many arrivals at all in the next fiscal year.
I'm looking through some statistics. The highest number of U.S. admissions was actually under President Reagan.
200,000.
Over 200,000. Yeah. I don't have a specific year on that. But let's get to a few basics. Mm-hmm. if a refugee and his or her family has settled, this new number, the change in policy at the moment, doesn't affect them at all, does it?
No. So refugees are authorized to work. They have a work visa for 1 year, and they can apply for their green card after 1 year, and then for citizenship 5 years after that. SIVs have about a 1 year head start, so they are actually legal permanent residents, green card holders at the port of entry. They've got to wait hopefully a couple weeks to get that green card in the mail, but our SIVs are legal permanent residents when they get here. So we're also expecting, given this recent wave of SIVs over the last 3 years, in the next 2 years, a hopeful wave of citizenship naturalization applications coming up too.
And upon initial arrival, you need a place to stay. And it sounds like early on in the process, it's there's an effort to plug family into language services, somehow into some translation learning of English. So again, the groups that deal with that very first step, Deborah, are?
Well, our caseworkers, our staff basically meet, and our volunteers meet them at the airport, have an apartment set up, take them to qualify for public benefits or Social Security if they're disabled, help them enroll their children in school as a condition of their public benefits. You know, the primary person in the household, you know, has to either improve their English and or be actively seeking employment. The males mostly speak English because they work with our government. We have a couple of programs that are designed for women. Many are pre-literate in their home country because they weren't allowed to be educated. We have a child care licensing program for refugee women in which at least 15 women a year start a small business in their homes doing child care. So right away, we have seen the statistics. The time on public assistance is far less, on average 9 months to 8 months, and that, you know, families are finding a way into to socially integrate into our region and contribute to our region. So it's a sprint when they get here, and we help with that sprint. But, you know, there are lots of either required English language development classes or optional. We have another small program, pre-literacy for refugee women, with a partnership with the public library. So we have tools that are designed to fit these communities.
Yeah, the English learner program I know at Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services, which can also lead to a GED or any kind of educational programs, has been really popular for decades.
Yeah, it's been a really, I don't know, for me, it's an opportunity, not a challenge, to be able to serve this new community. So really happened organically to see the change in the demographics of the class. And we realized with this, the female student population, wow, we need to open a new lower level of class, because it wasn't for our beginner levels that had primarily been maybe Spanish speakers with a second or third grade education level, reading level. We were talking zero formal education, no written capability in native language because they had not been able to. And hearing directly from a mouth of one of my students through a translator, you know, thank you so much for this opportunity. I was not able to do this at home. We want to come here. We want to go to class, that we can do it now. We're allowed to.
Well, again, the numbers will change, shift sometime after the beginning of this next fiscal year, which is October 1st. And I think that just seeing a picture of this down the road, 6 months from now, what's happened, will say a lot in how the flow is to the Northern California region.
I wanted to offer one other thing, because Deborah mentioned benefits. I do a lot of presentations out for community agencies, and sometimes folks are concerned about that, you know, this sort of impact on the economy. So did a little bit of research and found some data supporting that after a refugee has been in the United States for 20 years, they've paid over any benefit cost that was out to them, $21,000. Right now, what we're seeing, and this definitely supports who's coming to Sacramento, the working age of those are coming is the majority. So about 70% are working age, which is what we need given a lot of U.S.-born aging population. So just tremendous economic support. I mean, you could just find article after article about the benefit, the entrepreneurship of the refugee communities just across the country. And this is a tremendous loss to our nation.
Well, I tried to focus today not on the politics or the rightness or wrongness of the policy, but really on the process that happens here and and the impact that it will have and has had in Sacramento. Again, we'll post links so that if people need to hear more or find more, they can on our website.
Yeah. There's one more call to action that one of our partners, World Relief Sacramento, posted yesterday. So I believe there is still time, supposedly, that maybe this isn't the final decision. I think we want to have hope in that. So it is to call your local representatives, or not your local representatives, call your congressional representatives and let them know that, you know, we, Sacramento, California, wants this community.
And I would just like to add, I mean, I echo that really call to action with the U.S. senators and congressional representatives asking that this issue be addressed. The other thing I want to say is Sacramento is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. We hear stories from across the country about not ideal welcoming of refugees. This community, across all faiths, across the business community, volunteers are just incredibly welcoming. And it's very heartwarming to see sort of the fabric of this community be so supportive of newcomers, mm-hmm. refugees, immigrants. So I just really want to thank your listeners because they have been fabulous.
Deborah, Genevieve, thanks for joining us today. Deborah Ortiz is CEO of the group Opening Doors. Genevieve Levy is Director of Family Services at Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. You can find those links to more information and more resources at capradio.org/insight. This is Insight on Cap Radio. Mm-hmm.